Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The initiative for building a mosque in any place where there's Muslims is not only a praiseworthy initiative, but it's also a necessary one, because the first thing that the Prophet ﷺ did when he arrived in Mecca was he established a mosque and he established an independent marketplace for the Muslims. So the spiritual sustenance and the material sustenance, these are the priorities of the Islamic tradition, is ensuring that people are taken care of materially, that they have what they need, and also spiritually. And that's part of the reason why the Prophet ﷺ was a merchant before he was given his mission as a prophet, because the merchant is the one that is doing the most benefit at the material level to human beings. But the central purpose of the human being is not a material purpose, it's a spiritual purpose. If it was a material purpose, there's animals that are far better than we are at fulfilling that function of just existing and procreating and eating. There are animals that can eat far more than us, and animals that can procreate far better than we can. So the central purpose, and this is where the Islamic tradition and the Abrahamic traditions diverge with other traditions, the central purpose is a spiritual purpose, and so the mosque has to be the center. Now, in England, increasingly, we are having burgeoning populations of Muslims in various cities. There are historical cities in England. Most of the cities are historical to some degree, but there are historical cities that are iconic in English consciousness, and certainly the city of Cambridge is one of those. It's a center of knowledge. It's been a center of English learning for centuries, but it's also increasingly become a center where Muslims are taking advanced degrees in various subjects and sciences. So it's important to recognize that a mosque in that place will be serving the spiritual needs of people whose intellectual needs might be being met already, and their material needs are most obviously met if they're students there. But it's important to recognize the type of leadership that comes out of places like Cambridge, and the importance of nurturing those people at a very, very crucial point in their lives. If they're nurtured spiritually with their intellectual nourishment, then they will flourish. If they have intellectual nurturing without a spiritual nurturing, then unfortunately you get the type of people that the modern world seems increasingly capable of producing. And I think a lot of the Wall Street people are good examples of that. People just simply that their material needs override any other concerns, even the concerns of just being a basically decent human being. So I think it's a really important initiative, and I also think the leadership in Cambridge, the Muslim leadership there, is of the highest caliber in the country, and so that is an added bonus, because you know that the mosque is not going to be your average run of the mill type of Islamic center, but it's really going to have, I think, a very important impact. Dr. Winter, Abdul-Hakim Winter, I think he's arguably the most influential Muslim intellectual in the West. There's maybe people that are more known than he is, but in terms of really substantive thought and the type of thought leadership that he's provided, it's really quite an accomplishment. And so I think any initiative that he's involved in should be supported by the Muslim community, because he's not somebody that does things without great deliberation, and also he's a strategic thinker. I mean, we were wondering once, of all the books of the Ihya, he translated Breaking the Two Desires and the Book of Death, which, you know, there were books that I would have chosen before that, like Book 20. But on deeper reflection, when you consider the hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ said about the disease of the Muslims at the end of time would be love of the world and fear of death. So really, that's actually, those are the two most important books for the end of time people. And that's the type of subtlety, I think, that's involved with Dr. Winter's initiatives and his thought. So I think it's important for Muslims to recognize that caliber. In some ways, you know, he's up in Pleiades, and people tend to that have poor eyesight can't even see the lights that far up. But I think it's important for those of us who do recognize to put our support behind those initiatives. Imam al-Ghazali he's at the center, really, I think, of the Islamic tradition. The tradition is after the actual revelation. The tradition is the response to this revelation that's been handed down. And Imam al-Ghazali is one of the great formulators of that tradition. He synthesized a lot of thought, and he also succeeded in doing something that almost all religions have had a major problem with, and I don't think any of them, in my study of the world religions, I don't think any of them has come near to the type of harmony that the Muslims were able to achieve in the exoteric and the esoteric aspects of religion. What you tend to find is religions diverge into an esoteric route and then into an exoteric, and they tend to be antagonistic. Imam al-Ghazali is really single-handedly, in some ways, the intellectual and spiritual giant that was able to really show that not only were they necessarily to go hand in hand, but that was the intent and purpose from the beginning. And that restoration is very important in every time and place, because a lot of the crises now that we're suffering in the Muslim world is a direct result of the divorce of the inward teachings of Islam, inward fiqh, for instance. Arrogance is haram. It's haram, prohibited to be arrogant. But people don't really think of arrogance like they think of usury, for instance, or like they think of wine. But arrogance is probably more dangerous than wine. And yet Muslims will be incredibly observant about the exoteric prohibition of wine, but not about the esoteric or inward prohibition of arrogance. And then how do you detect those things, the science of detecting it? How do you treat those problems? The symptoms can be clear to others. You need doctors to discern the signs of arrogance and to elicit the symptoms from the patient. So that, you know, it's important that Imam al-Ghazali and people like him, because he's not the only one, there are other great people in that tradition, but it's important that their thought be renewed and be reframed also, because every time and place has its language and its characteristics. And if you don't talk to people in accordance with their knowledge, the Quran says, "Wa ma arsalna min rasulin illa bi lisani qawmihi liyubayyin lahum," that we did not send any messenger except we gave him the tongue of his people, bi lisani qawmihi, the tongue of his people, in order to clarify to them. Because if he speaks in a tongue that is alien to them, then they won't understand it. And so it's very important for the language to be congruous with the actual society that one is in. If the language is disjointed, if the metaphors that are being used are not metaphors that people can relate to. If I'm talking about camels and the desert, to a people that are living in a verdant England, then I'm not really using the proper metaphors to drive a point home. So making that relevant to people is really important, and that's why reassessing the books, bringing that knowledge available to people. Certain people can read him directly, and other people need to read him through a different type of translation, which is a rewriting. Bringing, I think Dr. Winter recognizes the incredible importance of visual media now. We're losing a literate culture. The Muslims traditionally were a book culture, but people are transitioning into a different type of literacy. Visual literacy is a type of literacy, and undeniably, and films can be watched at different levels. They can be watched purely as entertainment, but they can also be watched as an edifying source. I think teaching and using these mediums are really important, and I think that's what he's trying to drive home. But also, I think what's important is that he's also committed to a standard of excellence that's often absent in the Muslim community, and that's very important, is because unfortunately, very often we work at very high levels in our worldly jobs, but then when we actually do Islamic work, the level suddenly drops radically, and arguably there's a shift in that. I mean, we can see there's definitely been improvement, certainly in Western Islam, over the last 10-15 years, but we're still not where we should be, because the form and content, everything has form and content, and one of the things that Western culture is very adept at is form. Where they're often very lacking is in content. Unfortunately, the Muslims, we often have very good content, but the form in which it's presented is lacking, and people are attracted first and foremost by form. We fall in love with our spouses very often initially by the way they look. It's only as we come to know their content that the love grows. But form is a very powerful aspect of just human behavior. And that's why if Islam is not presented in a beautiful form, we might never get to know its content. We need people to inspire our youth and to make them feel proud of the tradition that they're part of and the richness of it and the beauty of it. Because there's just so much out there that is negating that aspect of our faith, and it becomes increasingly harder for young people to be proud of something that they should be inherently proud of. They shouldn't be ashamed of being Muslims or feel embarrassed about their religion. But unfortunately, a lot of our institutions, a lot of our, a lot of the people that are involved in Islamic work often are not working at the calibers that are necessary to really instill pride in the people that they're serving.